All right. Channel 9 Live, Day 2, Mix 11, Las Vegas, Windows Phone 7. Hey, tweet some questions. We have some very large brains here. These are very technical people behind the Windows Phone 7, the platform, the operating system, etc. So tweet questions to #CH9Live and, you know, ask them about how they implemented the things you learned about today. That's the whole point. So Ishvan Abolade. You are a distinguished engineer. You are a very senior developer. Let's jump right into this. One of the big things talked about today was background processing.
Yes.
How does it work? How is it implemented? You know, give me some information.
I'll talk in actually quite a bit of detail today at my presentation.
Excellent.
But let me basically say that we built a pretty comprehensive platform last year for Windows Phone 7. This time we are building on top of that existing architecture, and we are extending it all kinds of directions. Okay. One of them is multitasking. I believe we have actually a unique combination of, if you look at the two major competing platforms, I would say we are somewhat between the middle of the two.
Okay.
With our multitasking capabilities, we are a little bit more flexible than, let's say, the iPhone, iOS platform.
Okay.
And we are less free and less kind of wild than the Android platform. On Android platform, basically anything goes. You can do anything you want, and the result of that is that end users who are, we really think of, for us, end user is the king.
Yes.
So for we actually really wanted to make sure that their experience in terms of battery, their existing applications, is undisturbed. And Abolade can talk a little bit more about that.
Okay. Sure.
So if you look at what it takes to actually deliver the user experience we have, when you put the phone in someone's hand, the first thing they say is, wow, it's really smooth.
Yes.
It's really fluid. And that actually represents a lot of work. So we've sort of tuned the interface, and we've tuned what goes on the phone to make sure, you know, that animations are glitch-free, you know, that audio is smooth, and a bunch of other things. And so when we were sort of thinking about how to bring multitasking into the phone and allowing applications to be running, you know, at the same time we're delivering these smooth experiences, one of the first things we had to figure out is, well, how much space do we actually have that we can make available, you know, for apps to do things in the background at the same time the user is trying to get other things done in the foreground.
Right. I mean, we basically have a couple of major resources have to worry about, as Abolade said. One of them is memory.
Yes.
We have to make sure we carefully manage memory, make sure we are carefully manage CPU, and this is, again, going back to the glitch-free animation, making sure that the user experience is correct, and there is battery. Now, the interesting point is the first two, Abolade made this point the other day, which is an excellent point, the first two actually recoverable. You know, if you use memory, we can always free it up. If you use CPU, you can always stop using the CPU.
Yeah.
But if the battery is gone, it's gone.
It's gone.
So this is kind of, for us, that was a major point, that we made sure we actually created a budget for our multitasking experiences as far as the battery is concerned, as well as the other resources. But battery was the main thing here, the high order point here. And so that's what we spent a lot of time, create a budget with a careful looking at what functionality you want to achieve. And that was a lot of work.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And so a lot of the work was just taking that budget, which represents what we have available in terms of CPU, in terms of memory, in terms of power, and then having a resource manager and a resource management system and a set of policies that tells us, okay, what is it that we can get done? What apps can we run? You know, what features can we light up, you know, that will fit inside that budget at any given time?
Interesting. So I want to step back a little bit more and kind of explore the valley that you're talking about in between iOS and Android. So I understand that you're very concerned about battery life, and so you're not going to let long-running things just suck up your battery without the user perhaps allowing that and being intentional in that happening. Let's talk a little bit more. So essentially what I'm hearing is this user sort of, wouldn't say user-generated, but user-focused multitasking. Tell you what to multitask.
So yes, that's part of it.
More.
But it's more about also when we think of end users as a king, we want to make sure that we understand the user's intent.
Yes.
So for example, when we talk about audio multitasking, where you want to make sure that audio is running in the background, it's available to the user. User can listen to it. The code can actually decode even audio in the background, whether this is a native experience or now or third-party experience, can do the same. that's the user's intent is that is actually going on.
Sure.
So there, actually, we give a little bit more freedom to the mm-hmm. code mm-hmm. compared to other experiences where the user is actually interacting with another app, mm-hmm. and we want to make sure, as we talked about it, is that it's glitch-free. The app can actually get the resources, mm-hmm. and no background activity will take those resources away or, which is much worse, drain the battery.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And so one way to think about it is that when the user is, if it's an experience that the user is interacting with, like audio, which the user is interacting with even though it's not in the foreground, mm-hmm. then that's sort of primary. And for everything else, we want to make sure that, you know, it still works, mm-hmm. but that it fits mm-hmm. within the constraints that we have. And then by making those constraints work really well, mm-hmm. you sort of open up a much wider set of, you know, of possibilities where developers can dream things up, and so long as it fits,
sure,
you know, we can make it work.
Now let's talk a little bit about one of the things in the first version of the phone. You guys sort of implemented the what's called tombstoning,
yes.
where you essentially mm-hmm. freeze dry a state,
mm-hmm. right?
And in this case, you sort of did that because you didn't have multitasking. Maybe that's a wrong thing for me to say, but is that not true? So how does this implement? How does this affect today, what you just with multitasking, that world.
Right. So actually, we always had multitasking on the phone.
Well,
Obviously, the native apps always supported it. And you could argue that even though we tombstone the applications, resurrecting those applications is usually pretty fast.
Absolutely.
Not always. And this is something which we are fixing in this release. So now in this release, we'll actually let those applications to stay in memory. Mm-hmm. They are in a frozen state. That's the best way to think about it. They cannot have activity. We monitor it that they don't have any activity. But that also allows us to actually seamlessly go back to them.
Okay.
And so if you come back again to the way we think about things in terms of budgets, what we're doing in this new release is that we give the applications memory.
Okay.
Right. And we let them hold on to memory so that we can bring them back really quickly. But we take away their CPU and we take away their battery.
Interesting.
Right. And again, the resource management policies that we've mm-hmm. built, you know, are what make this possible.
Interesting. So, I mean, just to be clear, so there has been advancements in that area.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a question from Bluesware. Can a dev influence in some way the background tasking, his task or other tasks?
The answer is a little bit. Let's put it this way. Now, part of the reason I'm saying is a little bit that in general, we don't let applications or tasks influence other tasks. This is actually one of the principles we have on the phone, that we are isolating the processes and applications from each other to make sure they cannot access the data, each other's data, make sure they don't steal the user's data, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So part of it is you can't actually influence other tasks. That comes from the basic principle we have on the phone to protect the end user, who is, you know, end user is the king again.
Mm-hmm.
Now, having said that, the application, the developer, of course, will register or launch the task. So basically, the application developer will be free to say, okay, I need this kind of task, and I'm going to schedule that task,
mm-hmm.
or I'm running an audio task. And so mm-hmm. in that sense, of course, you do have influence of your own tasks.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I said a little bit. But at the end, it's the system who is managing the task lifetime, the system who is managing the budget, and the system is managing the resources.
Yeah. And so one thing that we really thought about was that, you know, our developers are also users for us. And so we wanted to make sure that what we delivered was very predictable.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you look at the budgets that we provide, you know, and the way that the background tasks actually execute, mm-hmm. we wanted to be able to give people really clear guidance of your app, your code is going to run on this schedule,
okay.
you know, with this frequency, you'll mm-hmm. have access to these resources, mm-hmm. and we move stuff around in the phone to make sure that that's predictable. So the goal is a predictable experience for users who are mm-hmm. trying to use the phone and apps, and a predictable environment for the apps themselves that are mm-hmm. trying to run in the background.
Yeah.
So one of the, I mean, just to ask a sort of a hard question in some sense would be, it's understanding to regulate sort of what you can mm-hmm. compute in a memory-constrained device, and you have a battery, blah, 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 very important, I understand. But how does that impact my ability as a developer to really fully exploit your system and to do things that, you know, maybe I'm going to need to do a couple, maybe four or five or six or seven background tasks simultaneously to compute some big problem, or you could say, well, that should be done in the cloud. Why are you doing that on the phone? Anyway, that's the question I wanted to ask you.
Okay. Well, if you think about it, running multiple apps at the same time, you run into the same problems we have with server scalability, which is that if you only have one CPU, having a whole bunch of threads executing doesn't actually make things better.
Exactly.
It makes things worse, because now you're context switching all the time. Right? So the way that we think about it is that, you know, really understanding, you know, this is a consumer electronics device, and you have to think about it like when we have fixed capacity resources, which we're going to schedule and time slice over time, and the way to deliver the best possible experience and to get the most out of the hardware is to treat it like a fixed function device and figure out how the stuff you want to do is going to fit in the budgets that you have in place.
I mean, I would add one point. Like, I mean, the basic idea of multitasking is that you actually switch tasks.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes back to Abolade's point that the developers have to be aware there is limited set of resources. There is one CPU, usually one or two cores on these phones, limited memory. So you actually have to be really conscious that it's not free. Just by launching more tasks didn't give you more power.
Sure.
Didn't give you more and anything more, really.
Yeah.
You just made, actually, the system slice a bit more difficult, and at the end, you're just going to destroy the experience.
Absolutely. And I mean, at the end of the day, and we'll stop on the multitasking now, but we have a question. How many apps can be sort of, we're talking about that. That's a good question, though. How many apps can be multitasked?
So, I mean, the question actually has two parts. So if you think about fast app switching, well, the size of the back stack that we had in 7 is you can have 5 apps in your back stack, and so that won't change. And so if we have memory, you know, to hold 5 apps in the memory, then you can have 5 apps in the frozen state.
Okay.
But then there's the other aspect of multitasking, you know, which is background agents. You know, so how many applications sort of can be running in the background? And that's something that we're still tuning. I don't know, do you want to add anything?
Well, I this is absolutely right. In terms of agents, we'll have a budget. I talked about the budget already. So this is our budget. We are still tuning. As Abolade said, we actually can tune even the number of applications on the back stack. That's very easy. In fact, in the future, as the device capabilities vary a little bit more in terms of, for example, memory, we may increase that. If the device is more capable, we can leave more memory, more applications in memory. In terms of the budget for the agents, we do have a fixed budget in terms of CPU. The way we are thinking about it is we do want to reserve at least around 90% for the foreground application. So that, by definition, is limiting the number of tasks we can run in the background. Again, we could pretend that we can run 100. It's not going to make any difference because you only have 10% CPU. Because, again, end user is king and want to make sure the foreground application is running smoothly. It has all the resources it needs. So that drives the whole experience.
Excellent. Please remember to ask questions at #CH9Live or #CH9Live. Hash actually sounds cooler. Ask questions about the development platform if you're out there. So now's your chance. We can move on now. I think it's interesting because you mentioned agents. You know, that sort of that's a different way of thinking about stuff.
Yeah.
What's the morphology of an agent?
Well, the way we think about it is that, again, we want apps to be able to get access to, like, the full power of the phone, but for the user's benefit, right? So when you think about, like, an agent, right, it's somebody, an agent, you know, is someone who's working on your behalf.
Yes.
That's right.
Right. And so if you saw Joe's demo, like that was a scenario where it was really very much about the application working on the user's behalf in a way that made sense and that allowed the app's experience to extend into the background. So almost a lot of the design decisions we made around agents were really just figuring out what are the right ways, what are the right sets of capabilities we should have to allow apps to extend their experiences into the background in a way that makes sense. And then come back into the foreground at the right time and in the right way under the user's control.
Excellent.
Yeah, I mean, in this release, you will basically cut, or you could think of it, you are splitting your functionality into two. You have the foreground experience, and you have the UI experience and logic, and now you can transfer some of that logic into these background agents. And these agents will work on the behalf of the user. The system will schedule them, and these agents will be available to do tasks in the system as the system allows them to run.
So how does that, is it sort of like a state machine going on in some sense, that's managing these?
Yeah, that's one way to think about it, right? These agents will have their lifetime management. They will be able to tell the system, schedule us on this certain schedule where we actually allow that. We have built-in services which are actually launching these agents, and these agents can then interact with them to get their tasks done. So basically, it's kind of a carefully orchestrated system. I mean, we keep saying the same again and again, but it's very important to realize that we do have to be very, very careful.
Of course.
We can't let it run away.
Yeah.
Because if it runs away, then you end up with a task manager, and the users have to go back and manage their own agents.
Exactly. You know, to kill tasks.
Kill tasks. Like, I mean, this is the last thing we want to do.
Yeah. I mean, that goes back to the really old days of Windows Mobile.
We can't have that.
We can't have that.
This
anymore.
Is an end user device. This is, everybody will have one of these.
Exactly. So let's move on now from multitasking, unless this is going to be, looks like we can't move on from it. David McSpadden is asking, if my app is resource intensive in the foreground, will its performance be limited if a user is running four apps in the background?
No. The short answer is no. We will always guarantee that the foreground application has the right resources. The background agents, and again, that's kind of the thing of it, it's not the apps who are running in the background,
exactly.
Really. It's the agents on behalf of the application running in the background. Mm. We carefully limit their ability to impact the foreground application.
Yeah.
Excellent. So you can listen to, you can stream music with one of a third-party player and check your email at the same time.
Yeah.
Al, welcome back, my man. I suppose only one app can do background audio at the same time. What happens if one app has audio going and another app starts it too?
Well, the simple answer is that another app wouldn't start audio. What would happen is the user would start audio.
Yes.
Right? And so what do we do if the user says, I want to do something different? Well, we do something different.
Okay.
So the goal is we'll switch the audio over to the new application, and now that's what the user is listening to.
Interesting. Now, if it was sort of an app that meshed different audio streams, the user would have to have that installed on the device. But I don't think that's something someone would actually do, but good question, Al. So let's move on while we can before we get another question on background processing.
Okay.
But if you have them, you can keep asking them. But I would like to talk about other things you guys have done.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
What are some of the other things you've done to sort of help with reliability, performance, things you've learned over the course of working with so many developers? You got IE9 work on the phone. We have a lot to talk about. So let's start with some other new things.
Yeah, so we, as I said, we built on the existing platform. We extended the software stack considerably. Scott already mentioned it during his keynote. We added over 1,500 new APIs to the system. And we extended a couple of major areas. One of them was structured storage. We are adding now structured storage to the phone using the SQL CE compact engine. This is the 4.0 version, which is actually also available on the desktop. So you have great tooling for it on the desktop. You can now use the same on the phone. We are incorporating our Silverlight 4.0 capabilities with all the advances they have. We are doing XNA and Silverlight integration, which is very interesting.
Yes.
Now you can actually combine 3D graphics or sprite handling if you want with your Silverlight application. And of course, the benefit there is that you can use Silverlight rich text rendering, for example, and multi-language support, and then you can use that in your XNA application, whether it's a game or a 3D graphics application.
Okay.
So right now, we are actually blurring now between... Before, you always thought of XNA as a game. Now we are blurring that. You actually will be able to do some very expressive applications using the XNA APIs. And the Silverlight 5 direction kind of shows the same. In Silverlight 5, we are integrating XNA with Silverlight.
Excellent.
We are also adding socket support. We are extending the launching multitask, some of the launching task capabilities, and so on and so forth. We are adding quite a bit to the platform.
Oh, yeah. Yes. So one of the things I was thinking of is the fact that, you know, in the managed context, which is that's how we develop on the phone, the garbage collector that's on there is, one could argue, is I wouldn't say deficient, because that's a negative thing to say. Mm-hmm. That's not what I mean. But it's certainly not capable of sort of, its uncle. Or I don't know if it may be further generational. My point is, it's a single generational garbage collector running on ARM. It's very constrained. It's a very complicated problem. Has there been any improvements to help in there, especially now that you have agents running? And talk to me about garbage collection.
So we do have a generational garbage collector.
You do?
With this upcoming release.
We do.
So we talked about...
That's
Scott
the biggest news of the day, brothers and sisters.
And it does make a big difference.
Thank you. Tell
Absolutely.
Us more.
So it does make a big difference. So basically what they did is they took, you know, some of the functionality, obviously, that folks are used to, you know, on the desktop and just brought it to the phone. And so for games, you know, and for applications, you know, obviously that generate, you know, that work with large amounts of data. Mm-hmm. You know, now being able to incrementally collect garbage, you know, as the runtime is proceeding makes a big difference in their performance.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, we used to see upwards 200, 300 millisecond lag sometimes because of the lack of the generation collection. Mm-hmm. Now it's down to 10, 15 milliseconds. So we actually can really run fluid animations now and gameplay why the collection is actually running. So that's a really great
thing. That's outstanding.
Absolutely.
Yes, it's awesome.
And for animations, it's actually a big deal because if you think about what's going on the phone, when you actually interact with the UI, you're watching a 60 frame per second animation.
Yeah.
We're constantly compositing the UI onto a 3D scene, a single scene that's shared across the phone. Mm-hmm. And so if you are 200, 300 milliseconds in garbage collection, you know, obviously it's not going to be all that smooth.
yeah, you will have 3 frames per second then, which obviously won't be great.
No, that would be really, whoa. Yeah. But that could be sort of a game. See how frustrated you can get people. But no, I mean, that's great news.
Yeah, for the platform, that was one of the major, the NetCF team did an excellent job with that.
Excellent, man.
Absolutely.
So IE9 running on the phone. Mm-hmm. So what was that experience like getting that to work? Talk to me about that. I mean,
I think it was actually interesting because it's somewhat related to what we talked about, you know, with the single scene and how we actually do graphics on the phone. Mm-hmm. Again, we're composing everything onto a single DirectX scene, you know, and so bringing IE9 to the phone sort of fit naturally with the way that we think about the UI, right? We're bringing all of these different stacks, Silverlight, you know, XNA, and now IE9, you know, with its HTML Direct, you know, to the hardware, you know, and so we're able to do all of these things and sort of have them work smoothly together in a constrained function device because we're going almost directly to the hardware.
Yes, excellent. We have a question from George Kinsman. If I want to run a live agent that runs an IRC client, how well would the client receive messages? How does it handle that? So how does an agent deal with asynchronous communication in the background is sort of what he's asking, right?
Right. So that's an interesting question. For our agents, we don't let them run continuously, except in the case of the audio agent.
Okay.
Again, the audio agent is very special because it has end-user visible activity. Mm-hmm. So those can run. But the other agents, and there are a couple of different classes of agents, one of them we call periodic agents. Mm-hmm. The periodic agents run on a schedule. So if you want to use it for an IRC client, whenever that agent is allowed to run, then actually it could check the status and it could send you messages, whether it's a tile update or a toast to the user. Mm-hmm. But I won't necessarily recommend. For those IRC, I would recommend using push notifications. This is what was built for. We have a very efficient way of receiving messages, batching them together. We have a service which is handling it very carefully, keeping it in mind that, again, the phone battery lifetime is very important.
Yes.
So for some of these, I would recommend using push notifications.
Okay.
And that goes back to the trade-off that we have because we wanted to have a continuum of capabilities. And the nice thing about push notifications is that we have a single connection, and its impact on battery is amortized across all the applications on the phone that need sort of a push channel. And so that's really a nice capability that we've improved further.
Excellent.
You know, so folks should also take a look at that and think of it as part of their overall toolkit you know, for building experiences.
Incidentally, I actually did make the push client much more efficient in this release as well. I mean, that's behind the you know, the scenes, you don't really notice it, but our battery life significantly improved with the push client. Actually.
Excellent. So has battery life improved significantly since the first release, would you say, based on your improvements?
In some areas. I won't say that in general we made huge improvements over battery life, but each experience actually is actually improved. We tweaked it. Mm-hmm. So overall, I think you will see a better experience, but of course, what is also happening is there is this tension where we are actually trying to add more and more functionality to the phone at the same time. So, so the end result will be actually you're most likely going to have a similar battery life, but more capabilities.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So Vivid tweets, if a user is listening to songs and starts playing a game at the same time, then will it stop songs? What's going to happen?
It's actually up to the application. You can let the background song continue or you can take over.
Yeah,
it's the developer's choice.
And we just have guidelines that, you know, if you do interrupt music when your app is done, you should resume the whatever was playing.
The previous queue, yes.
Yeah. I mean, that would be kind of an awkward thing. So
right.
Does anybody not have a question about background processing? Clearly, this is the most important thing. Because it was the most obvious thing missing from the first release. But you guys did creative things with Resurrection and tombstoning,
yes,
to solve sort of that problem.
One of our principles was to do something we can build on, right?
Yes.
We didn't want to go very, very far in the first release. We wanted to learn. We wanted to see what you end users really need.
Yeah.
And now we are adding those capabilities, building on the foundation.
Excellent. And you've done a lot of performance tuning.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What are like some of the things that kind of what you learned from the real world, from using your platform? You're like, wow, maybe we should adjust how we cache or how we whatever. Give me some things about some of the core improvements you've made that have sped things up or made it seem like things are going faster.
Well, one of them you already talked about, which was the generational garbage collection.
That's the biggest news.
That one of the biggest improvements. We have SQLite memory working set improvements.
Excellent.
SQLite is doing significant work on improving scrolling mm-hmm. improvements and responsiveness.
Yeah.
We tuned the quantums on the threading.
Right.
I'm going to talk about that in my talk. This is kind of an advanced topic.
And one of the interesting things we touched on with push notifications, is that just the variability in the networks that are out there, actually it impacts battery in a big way. And so what we've done is across the services, mm-hmm. not just push notifications, but various of the other services, mm-hmm. being a lot smarter, about coalescing our use of the network make sure that, when the network is available, we sort of try and get as much done in parallel. So we amortize the impact, on the battery a lot better.
Right. Awesome. And some of the built-in experiences now also using push where they were not mm-hmm. using push before. So again, we get battery benefit out of it.
Absolutely. Now, would you say that pushing more things to the GPU mm-hmm. Sort of helps battery life as well? Or not? I mean, still, it's computing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just computing
depends.
Graphical rectangles and whatnot. But
yeah, I would say that depends, of course, on the GPU and CPU. But at the end, there is no magic. When you have to done computation, you have to get computation done.
Yeah.
And again, it's depending capable. I mean, it depends on the capability of the GPU or CPU.
Yeah, and in some sense, to compute, you have to use electrons.
You
That's
have
how
to.
It works.
That's right.
And now, electrons live in the battery, and then they leave the battery. Right.
Right. I mean, the best way to do it, actually, to reduce the voltage, right? I mean, if you can start doing more advanced CPUs, which can run lower and lower voltage,
yes.
you're going to get better.
Oh, yeah.
Low voltage programming, man.
Yes.
Well, we just need the hardware. And the hardware will get better.
Actually. It is getting
right?
better, yes.
Especially in a lot of these consumer devices. So we got one last question for time for a question, if anybody have one. Al, we got one more coming. The light bulb's furiously working down there. I have to say, they should have mentioned it in the keynote.
Mm-hmm.
Generational garbage collector in the next version of Windows Phone.
Well,
dude, that's rock and roll, man.
Well, Scott actually did mention it.
Scott did mention it?
Yeah, Scott did talk about the generational.
Of course he did.
Yeah.
Of course he did. Nice job, Scott. So, Nazy asks, can't a developer piggyback on an audio agent doing non-audio tasks to take advantage of it running all the time?
What would you say, Abolari?
Well, I think, the spirit of the audio agent is that it's actually playing audio for the user, and so I think, obviously, that's not what it was designed for.
I would definitely say that's an abuse of the agent, during certification, we'll definitely make sure these things don't go through.
Absolutely, but you can bet that developers are going to...
I'm sure people will try.
The way we approach it is end user is first.
Yes.
Yep. End user is first.
Hey, and end users will vote.
Great to talk to you. I want to talk to you guys more.
Okay.
And I'm going to come visit you with my own camera.
Sure.
And we're going to geek out.
All right.
Hey, thank you guys.
Thank you.
Great job.